All right, folks, welcome to ninoscorner.tv. I'm joined with Derek Gilbert. Derek Gilbert, the author of The Second Coming of Saturn. This is, to me, very interesting because I love to jump into stuff like this because, to me, I'm trying to understand the belief system of the occult, right? And that's really what this book is about. And am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it kind of tracks the career, if you will, of an entity who was known to the ancient Romans as Saturn, but before that, he was known to other cultures by different names. Kronos to the Greeks, the Canaanites called him El, the Babylonians called him Enlil. He had other names throughout history, but I could connect him all the way back to Genesis chapter 6. I think he was the leader of that rebellion that created these monstrous hybrid creatures called the Nephilim. And I think he's
the one you're saying the god of Saturn created the Nephilim?
Yeah.
So maybe they came from Saturn? Would that be the right way to say it?
No, I think he just was an entity who was represented in the sky by that planet. It was known in the ancient world, or at least it was believed in the ancient world, let me put it that way, that the stars and the planets represented their gods and the heavenly host, the heavenly army. In fact, you know, God, when he was talking to Moses and teaching Moses what Moses needed to teach to the Israelites, he didn't say to Moses, okay, first things first, we need to straighten you out on some astrophysics here. He said, no, be careful when you come into this land that I've promised to you that you don't bow down to the sun and the moon and all the host of heaven, the heavenly army, and worship these things, things that I have allotted to the nations for their inheritance. Okay, so that's Deuteronomy 4, verses 19 and 20. God's saying, the other nations, they're going to worship all these lights in the sky, but you don't do that because you're mine. You belong to me. So Saturn, at various points in history, represented different entities to different cultures. Enlil to the Mesopotamians, Saturn, obviously, to the Romans, which is where we get the name. But throughout history, there was even a little known deity named Kayanu in ancient Mesopotamia, who was believed to represent or be represented in the sky by Saturn. So we've got the name of the planet, but we need to kind of forget that when we're starting to talk about these entities. And again, I think he's
every entity brings a certain power or force.
That's what the pagans around ancient Israelites believed. So you had this,
and these occult still believe in this. So we're still being ran at the highest level. At the highest level of a lot of the people in politics and entertainment, I mean, they're still following this. They still believe in this, right?
Yeah, it's not a coincidence that let's go back to the winter solstice of 2020. The winter solstice, of course, was one of those pagan dates where the sun stops moving the Earth's rotation, the tilt, stops moving northward so that the days here in the northern hemisphere are at the shortest on December 21st, and then it starts getting longer again. So that was always a day that was real important in the pagan world because they were smart enough to figure out, you know, every year on this date, the sun, you know, the days start getting longer again. And so there were religious rituals that were performed on that date. Well, in 2020, on December 21st, there was a conjunction in the night sky, visible, the first visible conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn, the closest visible conjunction in like 800 years, since year 1226. Now, this was significant from an astrological view because it was like the king of the pantheon, Jupiter, who was Zeus to the Greeks, Baal to the Canaanites, who Jesus identified as Satan in Matthew 12 and in Revelation 2, handing the baton back to the old god, his father, who he'd overthrown and sent back down to the netherworld. So this was Jupiter passing the baton back to Saturn, or Zeus giving it back to Kronos, or Baal handing it back to El. Two astrologers, and this happened at 0 degrees of the constellation Aquarius.
But they take this literally.
They take it literally, and this may surprise us. Now, as Christians, we don't believe in any of this, but when we look at one of the greatest conservative presidents in American history, Ronald Reagan, and his calendar was set by Nancy Reagan based on advice from her astrologers. So this reaches into the very highest levels of power globally here around the world. And it was 1 month after this great conjunction, or what astrologers are calling the great mutation, you know, representing the full final entry into the age of Aquarius, a new golden age because Aquarius is ruled by Saturn under classical astrology, and it's been believed for 2,000 years, based on a poem written by a guy who was lived at the time of Julius Caesar in the first century BC, that when Saturn returned and ruled again, there would be a new golden age. And I think that's what the elites of the World Economic Forum and other globalists are trying to make
happen.
So
you're telling me the World Economic Forum, all these globalists, are basing their belief systems on a poem?
You know, many of them may not be aware of this poem, but this is something that has been at work behind the scenes for a long time. And credit to our friend Tom Horn for pointing this out in his book, Apollyon Rising 2012, Zenith 2016. There was a poem written by the Roman poet Virgil around the year 40 BC. This was just after the death of Julius Caesar. And he prophesied, or at least it's taken as a prophecy, by occult adepts, Freemasons, for example, who believe that this is a prophecy that they need to make happen. The reason that we have the unfinished pyramid on the back of our dollar bill, that unfinished pyramid with the all-seeing eye at the top, is because they see this as a fulfillment of Virgil's poem. This poem called the Fourth Eclogue includes this line: "Now the last age by Cumae's Sibyl sung." The Cumaean Sibyl was very important in Roman history. She prophesied all of these things that would happen to Rome and what they needed to do if the gods got angry, that kind of thing. You cannot overemphasize how important the Cumaean Sibyl was to the ancient Romans. "The last age, my Cumae's Sibyl sung, has come and gone, and the majestic roll of circling centuries begins anew." And here's the money quote: "Justice returns. Returns old Saturn's reign with a new breed of men sent down from heaven." Mm-hmm. Now, Virgil was, being a poet, he needed a wealthy sponsor. And so he was writing this to kind of suck up to one of the politicians in Rome of the day. The guy was the consul, which is like the president of Rome. Okay. So that's what this was about. But Virgil's writings have been taken as prophetic for years. I mean, there was for example, this poem, even into the Christian era, the first, well, we'll put it in air quotes, Christian Emperor Constantine interpreted this poem as a prophecy of Jesus Christ. Now, it's not, because when you go down further in the poem, you see it's real clear. He's not talking about a Christian, it's not a Christian worldview, but it's been taken that way. And for hundreds of years, even into the Christian era, in fact, King Charles I of England, who was overthrown by Oliver Cromwell and lost his head in the 1640s, he did something that was called the Virgilian Lots. They would take the writings of Virgil and they would like flop it open, you know, this book, and then stick their finger on the page and take that as a prophecy. Kind of the way some people read the Bible, you know?
Yeah.
That's just a pro tip to your viewers. That's not how you read the Bible. Anyway, but this is how important Virgil was taken. So this great seal of the United States that we see on the back of our dollar bill, we've got the front side of the seal and the back side of the seal. The front side is the eagle with the shield. The back side is the unfinished pyramid with the all-seeing eye. This was developed around the time of the Revolution here in the United States. Charles Thompson, who was the Secretary of the Continental Congress, developed this. And he added the phrase to this seal, Novus Ordo Seclorum, roughly means new order of the ages. That's taken directly from that poem by Virgil.
Wow.
Now, in 1933...
So this has been in plan for a very long time, for this time in history.
A very long time. And just about 90 years ago was when that seal was put on the back of our $1 bill. This was done by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president, and his vice president, Henry Wallace. And both of them were 32nd degree Scottish Rite Freemasons. But originally, the plan was to put the Great Seal, the front of the Great Seal, which is the part that gets used on official U.S. government documents, the eagle with the arrows in its talons and the shield and all that, was on the left side of the back of the dollar bill. The unfinished pyramid was on the right. FDR insisted that they be switched to give more emphasis to the unfinished pyramid. Wow. Because according to Wallace, and I'm going to quote now, Wallace wrote this in 1934, "It will take a more definite recognition of the grand architect of the universe." That's what Freemasons will call God. "The grand architect of the universe before the apex stone," that's the capstone of the pyramid, "is finally fitted into place And this nation, the United States, in the full strength of its power, is in position to assume leadership among the nations in inaugurating the new order of the ages.
Nobis
Order Seclorum. New World Order. Exactly right. So this is why that symbol is on the backside. And it's why the unfinished pyramid's on the left. I mean, in English, we read left to right. So you assume if it's first, it must be important. But that part, that backside of the Great Seal, has never been used on an official government document. It's only on the dollar bill. And because Roosevelt insisted, he switched it to put it on the left to give it more emphasis. Wallace,
so that's like the Roosevelt, capstone of the pyramid. That's when there would be a finished product.
Right. And that's when the United States will assume the leadership of this new order of the ages. And if you, you know, and Tom Horn has been writing about this for a while, and he wrote about how the symbolism built into the art and architecture of the United States Capitol points to this. I build on that in The Second Coming of Saturn. I disagree slightly with Tom's conclusions. I think that this is a prophecy that these occultists want to fulfill of the return of old Saturn to bring in this new golden age. It's just that I believe that this entity, Saturn, is the one mentioned by John the Revelator in Revelation 9, the king of those in the abyss. I think Saturn, called Shemiyaza by the ancient Hebrews, is the same creature who leads the fallen angels who are now in the abyss, called he's the one called the Destroyer, Abaddon or Apollyon.
But like I said earlier, they believe in this literally, to where they even built Washington, D.C. based on this, correct? All the structures and symbolism in Washington, D.C. is based on this paganism, right?
There is a lot of occult symbolism built into the layout of Washington, D.C. Tom Horn's book, Apollyon Rising.
For this time period we're living in right now.
Right. Because again, now that we've moved into the age of Aquarius, under classical astrology, the constellation Aquarius is ruled by Saturn. So this is significant. And again, us Christians, we can look at this and say, well, this is all silly. This doesn't mean anything. Well, no, it doesn't. But we need to understand what these people believe. The occultists, the globalists, think about this stuff to understand what they're doing. And what they're trying to do really is bring us back to what Nimrod tried to accomplish more than 5,000 years ago, bring us into a one world government under their man. And whether they realize it or not, what they're trying to do is build the kingdom of Antichrist. Some of them probably know that this is what they're doing. I think the rest of them are just useful idiots.
Yeah.
They think they're trying to do good. They're trying to help us all live better lives, but they're trying to do it by making us all subservient to them. Hey, by the year 2030, we'll own nothing and we'll be happy.
Right. So they are on a projected path and I guess a goal, right? A goal or a finish line is 2030 when they want to complete this.
That's what the World Economic Forum has posted at their website and some of their predictions for the way we'll be living within the next decade, you know, by 2030. We'll own nothing. We'll rent everything that we need, and it will all be delivered to us by drones. Now, you know, I live out in the Ozarks. That ain't going to happen out here. Too far away. You're not going to get a drone that's going to fly from the nearest Amazon delivery point or whatever. And here's the other thing. They never tell us who owns these things that we'll be renting. We'll be renting our clothing. We'll be renting our vehicles, renting our house. Who owns those things? They never say.
But they also want to push people like you that are out in the Ozarks. They want to push you out of the rural areas, right? Don't they? And push you into smart cities.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And this goes back to the way Nimrod's kingdom was organized 5,000 years ago. You look at the way ancient Sumer was organized and people lived in cities. It wasn't until you got further out into what is now, you know, Syria, southern Turkey, you know, Israel and so forth, where you had people who were farmers and shepherds who actually lived out with their flocks and lived out in the fields. But in Sumer, which is southeast Iraq, where Nimrod's kingdom was based, ancient Uruk, the city of Uruk, which is just Iraq by a different spelling, by the way. Isn't it interesting? We still call that land by the name of Nimrod's kingdom 5,000 years later. People were city dwellers, and they were given their daily allotment of grain, gruel, whatever, and sent out in the fields to work and then come back home. Basically, they were on universal basic income 5,000 years ago. And that's what the globalists want to take us back to.
Do you believe that they are behind schedule, or do you think they're right on point? Or do you think they're ahead of schedule?
You know, it's hard to guess. I think that they think they're on schedule. When we look at the plans that are leading us back to this one world government, putting us all under their control, for example, a digital currency, is a key part of this plan. They want to control how our money is spent, where and how our money is spent. And to do that, they really need to get us off physical cash and onto digital currency. I think this may be one of the reasons we saw this really spectacular collapse of that cryptocurrency exchange, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX, because regulators and governments can say, well, digital currency is a good idea, but we need to control it so that this never happens again. Well, see, Bitcoin is decentralized. The government doesn't control it, and governments hate that. So right now we've got 50 nations around the world, including China, the United States, the United Kingdom, the European Central Bank, Bank of Japan, and many smaller nations that are either testing or have already rolled out a central bank digital currency. So if the Federal Reserve Bank, issues out a digital dollar, the Federal Reserve Bank and the government, by extension, will know everything we spend our money on. And what's more, because it's digital, they can program it so that when we get our government stimulus, it has to be spent within a certain amount of time, and you can only spend it on certain things. And I'm sorry, Mr. Gilbert, your cholesterol's too high. You can't buy that ice cream or whatever.
It totally under control.
That's what the mark of the beast is going to look like.
That's scary.
But here's the thing. Whenever we start looking at this and getting really, stressed, just remember in Psalm 2, which reads, "Why do the nations rage and imagine a vain thing?" They're basically trying to take over the world. And God saw this like 3,000 years ago. Psalm chapter 2, the Lord looks down from his throne. Here, I just happen to have the verse up here because Sharon keeps directing me to this. My wife is the wise one here in the house. And so when I'm out on the ledge, looking at, the news and getting really stressed, she says, just remember Psalm 2, "Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together." And the Hebrew, by the way, behind those words, kings and rulers, can also mean supernatural entities like fallen angels and demons. "The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord," against Yahweh, the God of the Bible, "and against his anointed," his Messiah, "saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us." Here's the money quote. "He who sits in the heavens laughs."
That's great.
"The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill." So these people think they're winning. Okay, Klaus Schwab, the Bond villain, and all of his globalist minions. Pope Francis with his Council for Inclusive Capitalism. You've got a Jesuit Pope giving direction to people from the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers on inclusive capitalism.
Up.
I know, Alex Jones' head is exploding.
Right.
But they think they're winning. They think they're winning, and God just laughs at them. So what we're doing and what we're trying to do is just say, look, let's be aware of what's going on around us. Jesus told his disciples to be as wise as serpents while being as gentle as doves. We're sharing the hope that we have.
How long does this Saturn return last? How long is this period supposed to last for? Till the next age?
They think it's going to last forever. This will bring in a new golden age, which in history is this period when Saturn ruled and life was easy and the earth gave its fruit and crops without having to work for it. But the Bible tells us in Revelation chapter 9, when this entity comes out of the abyss with his minions, they will get 5 months. And it's going to be literal hell on earth, because anyone on earth at that time who doesn't have the seal of God on their foreheads, meaning those who've not accepted Jesus Christ, they're going to wish they could die. They will long to die, but death will flee from them. So that's really interesting, because
we haven't gotten there yet, obviously.
No. But the World Economic Forum's Great Reset includes something they call the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And that's just a fancy way of saying transhumanism, this idea that somehow we will overcome death through technology. Now, I don't think they're ever going to do that. That's God's domain. God's got the power of life and death. But just assume that they can radically extend human life through supplements, or there are some who are actually taking transfusions of blood from young people, thinking that will make them younger again.
I know what that is.
Yeah.
I can't say it on here, but my audience knows what that is.
Biosis. Yeah. Anyway, if they can do this and extend their lives, there's a day coming where they wish they hadn't. They will long for death, but death will flee from them. And that's interesting too, because the word translated death is Thanatos, which is the name of the god of death in the Greek religion. That's the rider on the pale horse in Revelation 6. So the pale horse rider, when people will long for him to come and take them, no, he will be nowhere to be found. So they will not, but again, the good news is that this only lasts 5 months. And I think it's the last 5 months before the Battle of Armageddon. But the Bible's not specific on that. That's just my best guess.
Could we safely say it's probably going to be before 2030?
Hard to know. It sure feels like it's going to happen quick. You know, you and me, we're old enough to look back like 10, 12 years and say, the world has completely flipped on its head in the last 10, 12 years.
Insanity.
I'm old enough to look back at the 70s. Things that we couldn't even talk about in public are now considered, you know, unwritten rules. If you speak against this, you're deplatformed. So, you know, it's coming faster and faster. If it happens 2030, 2035, that would not surprise me at all.
Don't you think this whole transgender, agenda thing that's happening now is a prelude to transhumanism to condition us for this?
Absolutely, it's part of it. It's absolutely part of it. Sharon has really done some good research on this and given a couple of good presentations on an ancient Sumerian goddess called Inanna. She's also known as Ishtar or Astarte in the Bible. She was gender fluid. She could be a female or a male. And there are hymns that have been preserved, ancient Sumerian texts with hymns to Inanna, praising her for being able to change men into women and women into men. So this is a very old idea. What we're being told is progressive, it's regressive. It's turning back right. The clock 5,000
years. It also has to go with Baphomet, correct?
Baphomet, that's an interesting thing. I need to do more research on that. But from what I have read, Baphomet is a name that actually emerged in the Middle Ages as a bad transliteration of the name Muhammad.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So let's get into like what they literally believe, what's literally happened on this planet. I've had guests like Ali Sadathan, Ellie Marzulli. I've had Gary Wayne on talking about the giants of the past. Basically, do you believe that kind of what they're preaching here, what they're talking about? They've been on some say they've been on them excavation sites. They've seen giant bones, that these Nephilim did exist on Earth, correct?
Yeah. Now we don't have the bones, at least none that have been made publicly available.
Well, I've heard they've been shut down. The Smithsonian comes in, takes them away.
Right. We talked to a fellow on the island of Sardinia when we were there in 2018 with Timothy Alberino, who said that they had found some on the island of Sardinia where there are like over 200 tombs of the giants that are still standing on that island, and that representatives from the Vatican came in and took those bones away. So I don't doubt that they existed, but Sharon and I, back about 4 years ago, wrote the book Veneration, 3 years ago, which is about this cult of the Nephilim. And we didn't want to recreate or just replicate the work already done by people like L.A. Marzulli, Gary Wayne, Steve Quayle, Tom Horn. We looked at the ancient texts. And while we can't point to any skeletons of 15-foot giants and say, see, here's one, what we can do is point to texts that have been translated by secular researchers and historians, archaeologists, and say, yeah, there was a cult developed by these spirits after the flood of Noah that continues down to the present day. The cult of the dead, this idea that you need to venerate your ancestors and offer them gifts and sacrifices. This is a very old idea that goes back to ancient Mesopotamia, and you can trace it right back to the Nephilim, the giants destroyed in the flood.
So you believe they did exist. They were on this planet. So that kind of throws a monkey wrench into evolution, doesn't it?
Well, it does, which is probably why, if assuming bones have been found, why they've not been made public, because it runs counter to Darwinian evolution.
Right, right. And then that's what I've always thought. I've thought like the reason they get shut down, it throws a whole monkey wrench in evolution. People start waking up. What is this? I mean, the Bible specifically talks about David and Goliath.
Yeah.
Goliath being a giant.
So here's the thing. You know, Goliath was a big dude. There's no question. But the oldest Hebrew text available to us put him at 4 cubits in a span, not 6 cubits in a span. That's a difference of 6'9" versus 9'9". So, but even at 6'9",
that's a big dude.
Yeah, it's a big dude because
Plays
in that
NBA.
day, right, at a time when the average Israelite was about 5'4", I looked that up. So, you know, that's like me trying to fight Shaquille O'Neal or something. You know, he's a big dude. But here's the thing that's even more significant. And again, this is something that we can document and prove from the biblical texts, from other archaeological texts that have been found, historic texts from the period of David and Solomon, and even earlier, the time of the judges, that the people around ancient Israel venerated the spirits of those giants, the Rephaim, they were called. And when you look at 2 Samuel 21, the end of that chapter, that's where David and his men take down five other giants, including one named Ishvi Ben Ov, who almost killed David until one of his mighty men jumped in and saved David at the last minute. These guys are called descendants of the giant or descendants of the giants. But the Hebrew word translated descendant into English actually means, it does not mean a blood descendant, a genetic linear descendant of the Rephaim or the giants. It means one who's a member of a group into which he was indoctrinated or consecrated, basically a member of a cult. It was a warrior cult that worshiped the spirits of the Rephaim. So they were like demonically possessed warriors. I mean, think of like the Viking berserkers, okay, from about 1,000 years ago. These berserkers who would go on the battlefield with the Vikings were supposedly, you couldn't hurt them. They were impervious to pain, to fire, to injuries. The problem was they were so crazy, they would kill everybody who got close to them, even their friendlies. So after about 100 years of the berserkers, the kings of the Vikings, you know, the Danes and the Norwegians and the Swedes got together and said, "Let's not do this anymore. This is too dangerous." But that's who Goliath and those other giants, the Philistine giants, were. They were worshipers of this cult. And the name of the guy who almost killed David, Ishvi Ben Ov, is a clue. Usually in our Bibles, it puts those last two words together. It looks like Benob, like Benob. And the translations means, oh, it means he's from a place named Nob. No. Ben Ov means son of a medium, son of somebody who was constantly talking to the dead, summoning spirits of the dead. And that's who these Rephaim were. So I
You
think
know,
that's what we're looking at here.
this kind of reminds me of, I've talked to L.A. Marzulli about this. Are you familiar with the Kandahar giant? I mean, it sounds to me like that was a true story. I mean, from the evidence that was brought forth, and L.A. Marzulli has talked to, I guess, one of the kids or men now that were on patrol or in one of the units, this and that. And if people are familiar with the Kandahar giant, it's an unbelievable story about unit of I guess special ops that were
Marines,
going up in the mountains in Afghanistan, correct?
it was Marine Corps unit,
Right. And so if
a
that
squad sent out
story,
that basically took them, nearly killed them all. They
right,
were
but that
finally able to
giant
bring it
stood
down.
like 13, 15 feet and weighed about 1,500 pounds. If that thing exists, which I believe the story, then everything's on the table, man. I mean, I'm looking at everything like there is a lot of substance to this.
The thing, and again, I'm totally open. I believe LA and I believe the sources because I've seen the interviews that he's done with the witnesses to it, and they're credible to me. But I can't point to the carcass or the bones and say, okay, this proves our point. But what we can do, and again, this is where Sharon and I went with our book, Veneration, our follow-up book, Giants, Gods, and Dragons, is that the spirits of these giants who were destroyed, how long ago? We don't know, 6,000, 7,000 years ago, maybe longer. They're still with us. The early church understood it was a given in the early church for the first 400 years after the resurrection. Demons were the spirits of the giants destroyed in the flood. When you read the early church fathers and their writings on demons, it was understood. In fact, even the ancient Greek poet Hesiod, who wrote most of what we know about Greek mythology, comes from Hesiod, writing about the time of Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, 7th century BC. He said that the spirits of the men who lived during the Golden Age, there's that Golden Age again, when Cronos, their version of Saturn, ruled in heaven, they were called Merope's Anthropoi. And when they died, they became daemons. But the Greek idea of the daemons, and this is where we get the word demon, was that they were helpful as long as you sacrificed to them and kept them happy. So the demigods, the ancient heroes like Heracles, Hercules, Theseus, Perseus, Bellerophon, Cadmus, whatever, the demigod Zeus. Heroes. Well, Zeus would be a fallen angel.
Okay.
So he was fully divine, but the half divine sons of the gods, like Perseus and Heracles, their spirits were still around on earth. And if you sacrificed to them, they would help you. And the early church was like, no. And the Jews of the Second Temple period, the Jews of the time of Jesus and the apostles are like, no. We know where they came from. The Titans of the Greeks, they're the watchers, the sons of God from Genesis 6, who are now in chains in the abyss. They created those giants, and the spirits of the giants are the demons that are with us. And unless we believe that demons don't exist anymore, and there's no evidence for that, I mean, there's plenty of evidence there are still people being demonically possessed and oppressed. Those giants never went away. You know, they're not coming back. They're here. They've always been here. And that's the point that we make in our book, Veneration.
So are you saying that the demons, you know, the fallen angels, obviously they're not allowed back into heaven. So they're trapped here. They're demonic entities that are trapped here.
There's a difference between angels, and demons. Angels.
Well, I would think a fallen angel is a demon, right? I mean, now.
No.
Right? No.
Okay. No, there's a difference. The fallen angels, or the sons of God from Genesis chapter 6, who came down to earth and took human wives, okay? They produced these half-human, half-angel hybrids called Nephilim or giants, and their spirits became demons. Angels can appear with bodies. They have corporality. They can. The book of Hebrews tells us that we can entertain angels unawares. You know, they look like us. They act like us, talk like us. They can eat. Abraham played host to a couple of angels and fed them a meal. Genesis chapter 6 says that they can have sex and procreate. So those are angels. Demons are incorporeal. They're spirit. They do not have a body, but they look for bodies to possess, which is where you get demonic possession. It's two separate categories in the afterlife.
So an angel is physical.
Angel is physical, can manifest physically.
Demon is not physical, but they take over bodies so they can be physical.
That's correct. Yes.
So what are giants again?
The giants were the demons before the flood of Noah. They were wiped out in the flood of Noah.
So demons spirits, came after the giants?
Correct.
So they are the spirits of the giants.
Spirits of the giants, right.
So what are these? So I have a question. So what are these Peruvian elongated skulls that they've dug up that are in like Peruvian museums and stuff? What are those?
That's a really good question, and I don't have a firm answer to that. It's possible that there were more of these giants created after the flood. Our friend, who's a Bible scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser, points out that in Genesis chapter 6 says that the Nephilim were in the earth in those days, and also after that, meaning after the flood, when the sons of God, that's a term that means these angelic beings, when the sons of God went into the daughters of man, went in as a, you know, euphemism. But the word translated when can also be whenever. So the giants were in the earth in those days, and also after that, whenever the sons of God went into the daughters of man. So it's possible there were more that took place after the flood. I'm open to that idea. Don't know for sure.
So now that Saturn has returned, they believe that they're going to come back?
Well, Saturn hasn't returned yet.
Okay.
But they are. Well,
I thought you said in 2020, December 21st is the.
Right. The sign in the sky, right, that Jupiter handed the torch back to Saturn. But they are looking forward to him actually bringing back that golden age. Now, to some of these people who are working at towards this, they may just see this as sort of a metaphorical thing, a symbolic thing. I don't think that they realize when he comes back, it's because the abyss gets opened and these things come flying out of Tartarus, the bottomless pit, and makes life really miserable.
Well, that would make me believe. What about CERN? CERN.
Well, it's possible.
That's got to be a major tool for this, correct?
You would think. But again, in Revelation 9, this only happens when God allows the key out of heaven, when an angel is given the key to come down to earth and unlock that bottomless pit. The guys at CERN can do whatever they want, but until God says, okay, now's the time, it's not going to happen.
What's the significance of Mount Hermon?
Mount Hermon is the place.
Sorry, Mount Hermon.
That's all right. It's based on a Hebrew word, Herem, that means under the ban. Like, this is forbidden territory. don't go here because it's off limits. If you touch it, you die. Mount Hermon is where these sons of God are supposed to have come down and made a mutual pact to go ahead with this sin of corrupting human blood, the human bloodline, by commingling with us, but also teaching us things that we weren't supposed to know, secret knowledge, like divining the future, casting spells, making potions, things like that.
Black magic.
Black magic, right. And Jesus made it clear that there was something significant about it because he declared his divinity at the base of Mount Hermon, the city called Caesarea Philippi, which was a cult center for a number of pagan cults, including the goat demon Pan. That's why it's called the Grotto of Pan or Panias. At the base of, you know, right in front of this cave, which was the source of the Jordan River, is where Jesus asked Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" "Oh, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God." "Ah, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter," a little wordplay there, "you are Petros, and on this rock, this Petra, this 9,200-foot mountain behind me, I will build my church. And the gates of hell," which is this really big cave right over here, that was believed to be bottomless. The first century Jewish historian Josephus wrote that they'd never been able to lower a plumb line long enough to get to the bottom of that cave. It was believed to be the entrance to the netherworld. So Jesus says, right in front of this cave, "I'll build my church on this rock," which is believed to be the mountain where the pagan gods meet, "and the gates of hell," which are right over here, will not prevail against it. And then he climbed the mountain. Gospel of Matthew says climbed a very high mountain. The only one in the vicinity is Mount Hermon, and that's where the transfiguration took place. So he climbs the mountain that was supposed to be sacred to the pagan gods, and Jesus basically sends a flare into the spirit realm.
So are these beings, could they be these giants, these Nephilim, whatever they are, be underground, like literally underground? I've heard many people say that, like they are being held underground to be released at a certain time.
You know, I don't think so. I think that their physical form was flesh, and those have long since decayed and rotted away. Their spirits, though, are still with us because their spirits are still tormenting humanity. The Book of First Enoch, which, you know, it's not in the Bible, but it was known to the apostles. Peter and Jude both make reference to it. Jude quotes it directly, by the way, in his letter. So it was well known to them and to the early church. In First Enoch, it's explicit that the spirits of the giants destroyed in the flood were condemned to stay on earth, tormenting humans until the judgment. So I don't think they've got their bodies below ground. What I think is happening may happen, because we see a hint that these entities will come back for the Battle of Armageddon. The War of Gog and Magog, the prophecy of Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39, chapter 39, verse 11, God says to Ezekiel, I will prepare a place for burial for Gog in the Valley of the Travelers east of the sea. That's east of the Dead Sea. And the word traveler was a term used by the pagan Canaanites for the spirits of the Rephaim, these giants, because they crossed over or traveled from the land of the dead to the realm of the living. So I think the Battle of Armageddon, which is what Ezekiel's describing there, I think the Battle of Armageddon will feature a demonically possessed army. Will they be clones? Will they be people who are just, you know, so sold out to the enemy that they can be possessed? I don't know. But I think that the Battle of Armageddon, in a very real sense, is going to be the ultimate zombie apocalypse. You got the spirits of these dead giants in the army of the Antichrist.
Do you think maybe like in these deep underground military bases that are way down there, that there are genetically where they're experimenting on different creatures, this and that, maybe that's where they're going to unleash this army, that maybe they're giving them basically containers for these souls, to these demonic souls to go into and genetically unleash them onto the, I mean, cause I've watched trail cams on YouTube, and there are some things out there in the wilderness that nobody's ever seen before. And I'm not talking Sasquatch. Sasquatch has nothing on these things.
Yeah.
You get caught on trail cams, and maybe some are fake, sure. But I'm saying not all of them could be fake. And I'm just saying, do you think maybe they are experimenting with these demonic souls and creating bodies for them down below, releasing them in national parks here? I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I've got a friend in Indiana who who does a lot of research into the dogmen. But, you know, it's something Sharon and I followed for a long time. Tom Horn wrote about it in his novel, The Ahriman Gate. Sharon wrote something like that into her novel, The Winds of Evil. So, yeah, it's entirely possible. And that may be, I have no doubt that that kind of genetic experimentation is going on at DARPA and other military laboratories around the country as we try to come up with ways to defeat our enemies. So, yeah, if we can think of it, I'm sure that there are people who are a little more inclined to try to figure out how to, you know, totally dominate the world are already doing that kind of research. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, we have interesting times ahead. The second coming of Saturn. Derek Gilbert, thank you for joining me. This is you're always welcome on my show. You're always welcome on my show. Anytime you want to come back, where can people get the book?
You can get it at, well, of course, all major bookstores, Amazon.com, but you can go to GilbertHouse.org. We've got an online store there, GilbertHouse.org. And if you buy the book there, I will sign it. I've also got a 13-part video teaching series. I broke the book up essentially into 13 20-minute video segments. So if there's anybody out there who wants to really get crazy for a Bible study lasting one quarter of the year, you can go through the book over 13 weeks and look at it. A lot of research in the book. When I speculate, I'll say I'm speculating, but there are more than 500 footnotes in it. And a lot of it is coming from secular research, showing the connection, because the other name that I think we need to make clear of this old god, Saturn, Kronos to the Greeks, he was Molech to the Hebrews. And if you doubt that this entity has any influence in our world today, I mean, hey, the Bible says that these sons of God who sinned in Genesis 6 are in chains and gloomy darkness. Yes, but remember, this entity in almost every one of his identities was connected to human sacrifice and specifically child sacrifice. And the number one cause of death on planet Earth is abortion. 43 million last year. Wow. 43 million. So how is that possible? Well, you know, how does a mafia boss control action on the streets when he's in prison?
Right.
He's got minions, demons.
Right.
And that's what's going on.
Fascinating. I thank you so much, Derek, for coming on my show.
It's been an honor. Anytime.
You got it. All right, folks. You know where to get his book, GilbertHouse.org. You'll sign it for him, correct?
Yes, sir.
Amazing. Send me a book. Jeez.
Give me your address and I'll do it.
I'll do that. All right. I'll text it to you right now. Thank you so much, Derek, for coming on.
You bet.
God bless.